Remember Carl and Clarence Aguirre, the Filipino twins born joined at the tops of their heads? The two-year-olds are now in separate beds and separate rooms for the first time in their lives. It's only 2 weeks ago that surgeons cut through the last shared connections in the boys' brains, setting them on the road to independent lives. And instead of one long marathon operation, Clarence and Carl's doctors decided upon a staged approach to their separation with several surgeries over a time frame of many months. We spoke to the surgeons almost a year ago after the first in that series of operations, and they are here again today to tell us more about the boys and their separation. Both doctors are from Children's Hospital at Montefiore in the Bronx. Dr. James Goodrich is the director of the Division of Pediatric Neurosurgery. He joins us by phone. Welcome back to Science Friday, Dr. Goodrich.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Dr. David Staffenberg is the Chief of Pediatric Plastic Surgery and Surgical Director of the Center for Craniofacial Disorders, and he's right here in our studios again. Good to have you back, Dr. Staffenberg.
Thanks for having us back.
Last time you were here, we were just getting started. You just completed the first surgery on Carl and Clarence. Now it's almost a year later. They're in separate beds. Dr. Staffenberg, how are they doing?
It's just tremendous to go up there and see them in their separate rooms and to see mom running back and forth between the two. She finally now knows what it's like to have a set of twins. And they are, even now, just 15 days after surgery, they're back to their usual games. Yesterday, Carl pulled off all his head dressings and held it clutched to his chest. Clarence is flirting with the nurses, and it's just incredibly encouraging to see them do this well so quickly.
Do they know that they're separated?
You know, it's difficult to see. I think that we were really hoping for some sort of Hollywood moment or some sort of secret sign that they might give to each other, a little wink. But, you know, it was anything but, and they're not terribly impressed when they look at each other.
Dr. Goodrich, what remains in the coming up of surgery ahead?
Well, the issues we're trying to sort out now are obviously good wound healing. We're still concerned in Carl with the possibility he may develop excess fluid on the brain because he did not get any of the so-called Sherritt venous sinuses. And then, of course, down the road, Dr. Staffenberg and I have to get together and basically do a reconstruction of both of their skulls for a protective effect.
Mm-hmm. So there, you have to put pieces of bone back up where the separations occurred?
Right. Literally, the top of both of their heads and about halfway down the side are lacking bone. Because at the point where they refused, of course, no bone actually developed there. So that part, the crown of the head has to be literally reconstructed.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Dr. Staffenberg, when you started the process, you were under the impression that the boys' brains were just separated but abutting each other, touching each other, right? But when you got in there, you saw something else.
Well, it's really been fascinating that I think along this road, we've gone from the heights of extreme technology. We were the first group to use holograms in the operating room separating conjoined twins. And we've gone from those high technology things down to very, very low technology. And basically, it came down to all of the studies, all of the computers showing us that the brains appeared to be separate. But the low technology end was seeing Dr. Goodrich in the operating room just about ready to separate them, and he came up against this very, very unexpected issue, and we were just lucky to have him there.
Dr. Goodrich?
Yes, it was an awkward moment, to say the least, because as Dr. Staffenberg mentioned, we have literally imaged these kids with just about every form of technology imaginable, and all of the images had suggested to us that it was an abutment, not a true fusion. And what we actually ran into was a lobe that was shared by two of the children in the posterior parietal area. So it was not a matter of fusion. This was actually an interconnection between the two brains. And, of course, what would be fascinating was to figure out what they were talking to each other about through that connection, because it was obviously a viable connection. And fortunately, there was an area that looked very reasonable to come through, and we chose that plane, and they seemed to have not suffered any consequences as a result.
Yeah, you had to make a decision. You took a few hours off to think about whether to proceed or not, or how to proceed.
Well, we essentially, we took about 2 hours because I got our neuroradiology team, Dr. Brook, back up into the OR. We had a number of people there, and at first it was just a confusion. Were we in the wrong plane? Did we just not see where we were going? We expanded our craniotomies, our window of bone, looked around, and then it became very clear after about 2 hours of some pretty serious soul searching that they were truly fused.
And so did you have to decide whether to actually call off the surgery because in separation you might cause brain damage?
The that certainly was why it was taking 2 hours, because the question at that point, after that point, everything had gone very smoothly. We really had no problem with what we thought were going to be the difficult things, and those were the veins that were crossing over. And this was at basically at the end of the procedure, because we were down to that final lobe, but there, at looking at the brain, it became quite clear there was an area where a set of veins were coming out and going in opposite directions. And that kind of elucidated to us the plane that we should take, and it actually turned out to work out very nicely.
And so you made it, you made the choice of actually cutting off some of the brain tissue then to separate them.
Correct.
And you said before that you don't think there was any brain damage. How could you explain that?
Well, mainly what we looked for, certainly what I was concerned with in the immediate postoperative period, were we going to see any changes, for example, in mentation? Were we going to see any changes in their motor movements, their ability to move their arms and their legs? And none of that has shown up to date. Clarence's post-op CAT scan looks wonderful. I mean, there's really no evidence of any injury. Carl has an area where they were joined where there are a couple of what we call small venous infarctions, but his age and his ability to rewire, I don't think that's going to be a long-term problem, and he's certainly not showing any effect at this point.
So this is really a milestone in terms of the kind of brain surgery that you did and the fact you could take brain tissue out and possibly not have any. It tells us more about the plasticity of the brain, possibly.
Well, what I would have really loved to have known was what they were doing with that joint lobe. I mean, obviously we don't walk around fused to somebody else, but it was definitely a viable interconnection. And one of the interesting things is these two-year-olds, neither of them speak. I mean, they have wonderful communicative abilities, sense of their smile and their emotional ability, but they don't actually talk. And, of course, among geneticists, it's long been known that twins are slow in picking up speech patterns. So the question comes up is how much communication maybe they were doing between each other.
So they were really networked to each other. They were hardwired to each other.
So one could have thought of a joke and the other one smiled at the punchline.
That must have been happening all the while.
Well, we thought just that.
Yeah. Did they show signs of something like that?
Well, the twins are interesting. People who have raised identical twins in particular always have felt that they have kind of an extra sense between them. And I think these two boys have certainly shown that from the very beginning. When they were joined together, their play activities, they're swatting each other on the heads back and forth. I mean, there was definitely their own internal communication that was going on because they obviously could not see each other at that point.
That's fascinating. Now, you made the decision back at the beginning to take this out in various stages instead of one long operation to go many, many months over time, and that seems to have been justified now.
Well, that came about because when we and Dr. Saffenberg and the rest of our team at the Children's Hospital basically just sat down and went through all of the literature, going back to the earliest case we could find published, which was in 1495, and there is no question that the single-stage procedure in most people's hands just didn't work. I mean, either one or both of the children were lost, or one of the children would come out with serious neurological deficits.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly when we looked at Carl's brain, the fact that he had such a poor venous outflow, to in our mind that he was at an enormous risk for a serious stroke, if not death. So staging it really gave him the opportunity to develop the venous collaterals at output that he needed.
Dr. Saffenberg?
That really wasn't an easy decision back at the beginning. The first thought was to do the kind of separation we've all heard about. And the more Dr. Goodrich and I and the rest of the team looked at the world experience, the historical experience, it became clear that doing these stages was going to be much, much better, or potentially much better for Carl and Clarence. But it was also clear to us that it was going to be much more difficult for the team at the Children's Hospital at Montefiore and much more difficult for us. But you're right, it really seems to have paid off, and we see very early signs, just like every stage along the way, they've bounced back faster and faster.
Now, I know you don't like to talk about other cases, and I won't ask you to, but there is a case in Texas where it was done in one long, there was a conjoined twins done in one long surgery that has not turned out as well as yours, is that correct?
Well, we know about the case in Dallas that was separated close to the time that we did our first stage, Ibrahim and Ahmed from Egypt. Dr. Ken Salyer, Ken Shapiro, and Dr. Dale Swift separated them. Although they look very much like Carl and Clarence on the outside, and there are certain similarities, we know that team very well, and they're a very talented team, and I think we're confident that those twins got the best possible outcome because of their work.
And so what is the greatest threat that they're facing now in recovery? What do they have to overcome now?
Well, always is the two things that always reoccurred or kept as reoccurring things were infection and what we call spinal fluid leaks, which can lead to a meningitis. Until this skin flaps that Dr. Staffenberg rotated are really well healed until I know that Carl truly is not developing what we call hydrocephalus or water on the brain. Those are, in my mind, the two eminent things that we need to get sorted out over the next couple of weeks. But so far, I mean, they're right on target. There have been no curveballs thrown at us in any direction.
David?
Yeah, this is really one of the things that makes the staged approach much more difficult, and that is that we're reusing the bone over and over again. We're reusing the scalp flaps, so there's a certain amount of wear and tear, and we're asking Carl and Clarence to do a lot in healing these sites. So It's still a long road. They look fantastic. It's hard to walk in the room and actually remember what they've been through, but we have to really keep our eye on the ball and on the details just the same as we've been doing the past 10 months.
And what is the lesson from this surgery? I mean, what have you learned?
I think the lesson is, and the lesson's been very similar after all of the cases that Dr. Goodrich and I do together, and that is that each baby that we work on, each child that we work on at the Children's Hospital is different. They might have the same diagnosis, but they're different, and each baby and each child might need a customized approach, and we've been very encouraged by this.
Dr. Goodrich?
Well, no, I would certainly agree with that. I mean, part of the stage concept came from something that Dr. Staffenberger and our craniofacial team do all the time, and that's stage procedures. Anybody that's worked with a child with a serious craniofacial anomaly knows that that child is going to end up with anywhere from 5 to 20 surgeries by the time they're a teenager. So doing a stage approach is something we're very confident with. And again, looking back at the length of the total surgical time, looking at the total blood loss for both children, I mean, our numbers are way ahead of what had been previously reported. Everything has been shortened, and certainly if you could see these two kids, I think the outcome is just enormously gratifying.
Any new techniques that you tried that has been tried for the first time or things that were invented that will be going on now to the annals of surgery?
Well, you can bet this case is being published by a lot of different teams. Our anesthesiology team's putting it together because they're absolutely fascinating concepts that were developed. For example, Clarence very hypertensive and Carl hypotensive. The anesthesia management was a nightmare, but beautifully handled by three different anesthesiologists that were involved. We're certainly going to approach it right enough from a stage procedure, though we're not the first. Oscar Sugar, a neurosurgeon in Chicago, actually did the first stage procedure back in 1951, but one of the children died in that procedure. And certainly the technology, I mean, the medical models that were provided to us, the use of the holograms, the MRI equipment that we had available were just fantastic. And I don't think there are two children that have been more studied than these two kids have been.
Do you have a waiting list now?
We keep thinking when the next one's going to come, but, you know, they show up about once a year.
And the hospital's picking up the whole bill for this?
Yes, the hospital, thanks to Dr. Spencer Foreman, our president, and Elaine Brennan, our senior vice president, are the ones that initially made the decision to do this pro bono, and, of course, the staff are also doing a pro bono.
All right. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much, doctors, for joining us this hour, and good luck to you. We'll have you back when they're on their feet.
All righty.
Thank you
very much.
Dr. James Staffenberger, Chief of Pediatric Plastic Surgery and Surgical Director of the Center for Craniofacial Disorders at Children's Hospital at Montefiore in Bronx, and Dr. James Goodrich, Director of the Division of Pediatric Neurosurgery at the same hospital. Thank you both for joining us. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about art and science. What is it when a painting speaks to you? What does it say, and how do you interpret it? So we'll talk about the Mona Lisa and other paintings. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break.